Hello and welcome to my show, Nutrition for Health, Perfect Weight and Wellbeing on UK Health Radio, your global feel-good radio. My name is Dora Walsh and I've been working in the field of natural and functional medicine for over 14 years. I'm a qualified nutritionist and a nutritional therapist, and I support my clients to overcome their chronic health concerns like obesity, hormonal imbalance, digestive problems, chronic fatigue, autoimmunity, skin problems, low immunity, even long COVID and more. You can find out more about me on my website, NutriHeal.net, and you can also follow me on Facebook, Twitter and LinkedIn. Now today we're going to be talking about what you can do to feel better from autoimmune thyroid disease, and that is Hashimoto's. Maybe you've been diagnosed with Hashimoto's, or maybe you've been told you're hypothyroid, i.e. your thyroid gland is low, low output of thyroid hormones. Now, it's really important to know a bit more about this. Hashimoto's is a condition in which your immune system attacks your thyroid gland, and that's a small gland at the base of your neck below your Adam's apple. It's an autoimmune disease, and the gland, unfortunately, is gradually destroyed. Early symptoms might not even be noticeable, but over time, there may be an enlargement or a painless swelling in the front of the neck called a goiter, which I'm sure you've heard about. And then later on, the signs and symptoms are mainly those of the underactive thyroid, hypothyroidism. And these include fatigue and sluggishness, increased sensitivity to cold, constipation, pale, dry skin, puffy face, brittle nails, hair loss, unexplained weight gain, muscle aches, stiff joints, depression, and prolonged menstrual bleeding. So there's a lot there to think about. Now, this week, we're going to be talking to Nicola Hodges, and she is a registered nutritional therapist, and she's on a mission to support as many one-to-one clients via Zoom nationwide as she can. She'll soon be launching a Hashimoto's short online course covering the basic pillars of supporting your health with Hashimoto's. And you can follow her on her social media and you can check her out on her website. I'm going to give her a shout out. It's Nicola Hodges, nutrition.com. That's Nicola Hodges nutrition.com. And you can follow her on Instagram and Facebook at Nicola Hodges Nutrition. And you can find her on LinkedIn, Nicola Hodges Nutrition. Welcome to the show, Nicola.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
I really appreciate you coming on the show. I read out a long, long list of symptoms there of Hashimoto's, and I'm sure there are many more. Mm-hmm. But let's have a little recap of what Hashimoto's is. I only covered it very briefly. So for our audience that maybe have just been diagnosed with Hashimoto's and they're very worried, or maybe they have hypothyroidism, and obviously we know now that Hashimoto's is normally at the root cause of hypothyroidism. Let's give them a bit of a recap on what this is.
Yes, well, like you said, the Hashimoto's, it's an immune system disorder as opposed to simply just a thyroid disorder. And many of my clients come to me not even aware that that's the case, that this is an immune mediated issue. Many of them are told by their GP that they have an underactive thyroid and they may need some medication for it. And that's kind of the end of the story. But very often, once I start working with my clients, you know, we uncover that this is an autoimmune condition. Not over 90% of hypothyroid cases are an autoimmune condition, as in Hashimoto's.
So, wow.
Yeah, and it may even be more than that. I've even heard figures up to 99%. So, you know, you can pretty much bet your bottom dollar that it could well be Hashimoto's if you are told that you have an underactive thyroid or you are hypothyroid. So, and also, as you mentioned, that it affects so many things and it causes so many different symptoms. It literally affects every system within the body. So, you know, you're thinking about your hormone regulation, your digestion, even your brain. And to be honest, the brain symptoms, I think, are the most troubling for my clients. So the brain fog, the forgetfulness, the forgetting the right word or not pronouncing it correctly. And very often other issues as well, like poor balance suddenly takes hold. You know, maybe they're walking around the shopping mall and they feel like they're in a boat, you know. Yeah, quite unpleasant kind of symptoms that can also be linked to this condition. So, yeah, it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. So it's amazing that you said that over 90% of hypothyroid cases are down to Hashimoto's. That's massive. And I think there's not enough understanding around that. So it's great to get this message out today. Now, do you have a history? I'm sorry to ask you about your medical history. Is this something that you suffered from in the past? What's your story? How did you come to specialize in this area?
Yes. Yeah, so my story is from what I've heard through my experience with my clients, it's a very common one. So around the age of 33, I started to feel incredibly tired all of the time. I completely lost my spark. I used to be fairly outgoing. I used to like to rest as well, but I was fairly outgoing. I would seek out exercise for fun, things like that, you know. Yeah. As you would in your kind of early 30s. And then over the space of around, I'd say, just a few weeks, I put on weight. I would wake up exhausted. My hair, which was always a big head of hair, started to look quite sparse. Interestingly, my hair went grey very quickly during that time as well. My skin looked grey. My muscles ached. I had PMT that just got worse and worse and worse. And I would go to the doctor and I would complain of these symptoms. And I'd be tested. I would have all sorts of tests, blood tests, B12, vitamin D, folate, ferritin. My thyroid was tested. And I was just labelled as TATT, T-A-T-T, tired all the time. But I was told I was fine, and that was the end of it. And this happened a few times. It actually went on for about 5 years. So it was quite a prolonged investigation to find out what was going wrong, because I would go back to the doctor and I would still be told I was fine. And then eventually I saw a private gynecologist because of some of my horrendous symptoms around heavy periods and things like that. So I saw a gynae and I had some blood tests, and she confirmed that my TSH was raised. So TSH stands for thyroid stimulating hormone, which is the main measure of thyroid function within the kind of conventional medicine space. So that was raised, and I had my antibodies tested. So she tested for those as well. And thyroid antibodies is a good indicator as to whether you have thyroid autoimmunity. And mine were raised over 1,000. So the reference range for thyroid antibodies is around no more than maybe, depending on the lab, no more than maybe 9 to maybe 35. So mine was 1,000. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I was launching a pretty robust attack on my thyroid, and I was put on a low dose of thyroxine, but ultimately I still felt rubbish even after being on the medication. And that's a very common thing that I hear a lot.
This is so interesting. So it's obviously when you have these menstrual issues, but it sounds like maybe prolonged menstrual bleeding, which is one of the signs and symptoms, you went to get that investigated, and then she made the connection. She looked deeper and tested your TSH and the thyroid antibodies, which shows your body is mounting an attack. But I'm wondering why the GP didn't do that.
Well, it's a very common thing. So the standard kind of NHS approach would be to test the TSH, and you can see that, you can see how it should be managed on the NICE guidelines on their website. Actually, it details it quite nicely. Very often they're looking for a TSH of above 10. So mine at that point was around between 3 and 4. So it wasn't kind of crazily off the scale, and their range is usually 4.2. If it's above 4.2, then they may test free T4, which is one of the main hormones that your thyroid makes. It's called T4. We also make another thyroid hormone called T3, which I can explain about in a minute. But yeah, so that was never tested. My TSH was within the normal range for the NHS.
Yeah, so if they look at the TSH and it's normal, they think that's everything, that's fine. They're not looking any deeper to see actually, are there any antibodies? What's your T4, your hormone, etc. Okay, so then this lady, this wonderful doctor, realized, and then you got put onto the thyroxine, but you didn't feel better. Is that right?
No, it didn't really make a great deal of difference in my case. And so I ended up having a chance meeting with somebody, and she mentioned, have you ever seen a nutritional therapist? I hadn't actually heard of a nutritional therapist at this time, but I ended up seeing the one that she recommended, and it was quite frankly life-changing for me. So it wasn't as simple and cut and dried as, okay, so I have this thyroid thing going on. Because of the thyroid thing, lots of other things had happened or were linked to it. So I had very low iron. Again, the NHS didn't pick that up because their range is so broad, but my ferritin levels were so low on the floor, but they were just in range for the NHS. So nothing ever got done about that. And my B12 was incredibly low as well. And so all these things were suboptimal. And seeing the nutritional therapist really helped me address my entire health, not just the health of my thyroid markers, so to speak. So that's when things started to get better. So personally for me, I'm not actually even on any medication right now at all.
Wow, congratulations, you managed to get off it.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm always quite cautious of saying that because when it comes to thyroid hormone replacement, it is pretty crucial. If you really need it, then you must have it because it's going to be very hard to get on top of what's going on. But for me, addressing the, because I imagine I caught mine fairly early on the grand scheme of things, because that's another thing. You need to catch this kind of early before a lot of tissue destruction has taken place within the thyroid. So, you know, if my clients do come to me and their blood markers are way off and they're seeing their GP and they say to me, I really don't want to take medication, well, I say that I really do advise that you do what the doctor says with that, because that is pretty important if that's what you need. Yeah.
Yeah, because if the gland has been destroyed to the point where it can't make enough thyroid hormone, and obviously thyroid hormone is so important for so many body processes, then, you know, there's no other way to make it. You do have to take it.
Exactly.
And we're not advising anybody not to take it. But obviously you managed to catch it early, which you mentioned is very important. And if you can, fantastic. So you sounds like you managed to reverse some of the damage or prevent damage.
Yeah. So I keep a regular check now on my antibodies. And there are two types of antibodies that you can test for. The main one that's tested for, particularly within the NHS, and the most common antibody to test is thyroid peroxidase antibody, TPO for short. So that was over 1,000. That's down to about 111 and 113, hovering around that mark. Still would like that lower. But, you know, that's a big improvement. And my thyroglobulin antibodies, they're completely in remission now. They've completely gone, well, down to, I think, about 9 or something, which is fine. You're supposed to have some antibodies. Yeah. And they were also highly raised at one point as well. So I'm absolutely thrilled that, you know, it's really going in the right direction. And I do feel so much better now as well.
This is great. So for our listeners that obviously maybe are tracking their antibodies, you know, to have faith that they can come down if you can support yourself nutritionally through your lifestyle, etc. And obviously, if not, then you may need to take medication. But today we're talking about how you can feel better with Hashimoto's from a nutritional medicine and lifestyle perspective. So it's great that you're starting to feel better. The other one's starting to come down. Your TPO, thyroid peroxidase, is now 111. 213. How long did it take you to get it down to that level from being over 1,000?
This is interesting. So things really started to change for me when I really got quite strict for a while with my diet, and I did a lot of gut healing work. So that whole process, I was kind of, you know, learning around with the nutritional therapist for the first year, feeling better that way. But in terms of the actual antibodies coming down, that took about 18 months in my case.
Okay.
And so, I mean, kind of hitting the ground running now, knowing what I know, I think maybe if this was to happen to me all over again, I could probably potentially work on that a bit faster. But autoimmunity is a strange thing, you know, sometimes it has a kind of mind of its own and there's no rhyme or reason why some things change. And I think it's important to say, you know, you can never technically cure Hashimoto's. It's something that the best you can hope for is to put it into remission, and then if something can set it off again, for example, a highly stressful situation or you become ill or something like that, then there's always a chance that it could come back. So there's no quick fix with this. And it's more of a complete kind of overhaul in how you kind of approach your health with life, I think. There's no, okay, I'll take these supplements and I'll be fine and it'll all be sorted. It's more of an ongoing work in progress. But it's been a good thing. It's been a good thing for me because everything's better, isn't it, when you feel healthier? So it's worth the work.
Definitely. In a minute, we're going to be talking about the other symptoms and body systems affected including transient hypothyroidism, hormones, fertility, the brain, and also other autoimmune diseases which may be implicated in this. And that will be just after a few messages from our partners.
Sensation that makes you feel good.
How good are vitamin C supplements? Usually only a small proportion of vitamin C actually reaches your cells and has a positive effect. Whereas the high absorption levels of Oldman Laboratories' liposomal vitamin C help maintain optimal vitamin C levels in your body and strengthen your immune system. Now get 10% off when you choose Goldman Laboratories liposomal vitamin C capsules. Just quote 10 off at goldmanlaboratories.com.
Do you suffer from pain? B-Cure Laser, a home-use CE-approved medical device for the effective treatment of pain, is now available in the UK. The results of a double-blind trial has shown that B-Cure Laser offers a significant reduction in pain compared to the placebo group. To get your special B-Cure offer now, call free on 0808 501 5122 or Google Radio Pro London. B-Cure Laser.
B-Cure Laser.
UK House Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
We've got Nicola Hodges on the show this week, and she's the expert on Hashimoto's and thyroid disease, as well as many other issues. Her website address is nicolahodges.com, and you can follow her on Instagram and Facebook at Nicola Hodges Nutrition. You can also find her on LinkedIn. Now, Nicola, just before the break, we were talking about all the things that were going on in your life, how you became a thyroid expert, and your own experience of suffering from Hashimoto's. And, you know, the devastating symptoms. Let's talk about what we discussed, the other body systems that are affected, the hormones, the fertility, because you mentioned that you were having some menstrual issues and you went to a gynecologist and then identified your issues. So explain to us a bit more about that, because there could be women today listening that have gynecological issues and are feeling tired and they haven't put two and two together.
Yes. Sadly, undetected hypothyroidism is linked to increased rates of infertility and increased rates of miscarriage, but also, you know, heavy periods, horrendous mood swings, PMT, that kind of thing. And it can make cycles, often I see in my clinic, cycles become shorter and heavier. And, you know, it's important to see that as a holistic thing, in as much as you're losing all of that blood all the time, you know, heavy periods kind of every 21 days for some of my clients. And I was like that as well, you know, and it's hard going. And before you know it, you may be knocking on the door of anemia, which is also going to make you feel incredibly tired as well. It's so heavily linked with the hormones. And Once the thyroid affects every single cell in the body and every body system as well. So when that's off or out of whack, everything else is as well. So, and also, you know, during pregnancy, thyroid hormones are so important, particularly during the first trimester. So it's really important to get this checked and to know what's going on with your thyroid, I think, particularly if you're thinking of planning a pregnancy, to get that really under control, to get the right amount of medication if that's what you need. It's a very important thing. And as you mentioned earlier as well, digestion is affected. That's another big one that I see. Yeah, huge one. In fact, I would say half of my clients would come to me saying that they've just come to me for digestion issues and they were told that they were hypothyroid, and that's how they make that connection. And then they give me a call, and, you know, some of them are really suffering with really unpleasant, you know, gas, belching and bloating and constipation and really unpleasant, not good. And
this is so interesting, because obviously they're coming to you with digestive issues. They've also had a diagnosis of hypothyroidism, and they probably haven't thought that it could be connected. Ooh. And how is it connected?
When you're hypothyroid and everything kind of slows down, so the rate at which the gut goes through the motions, so the kind of the way that it, how fast you digest the food is kind of slowed right down. So it's called the migrating motor complex. So the way, the speed at which the bowel kind of empties is slowed down. So you can find yourself very constipated. Stomach acid can start to not be as potent and as strong, which kind of strangely causes symptoms more of acid in the stomach, more kind of reflux and heartburn. And actually it's because of low stomach acid, low pancreatic enzyme output as well. So when you're trying to digest your protein rich meals, so for example, if you were to have a steak, that can become something that's really difficult to digest, which could maybe cause foul smelling flatulence, things like that. And you know, when the stomach acid becomes a lot weaker, the nutrient deficiencies can take place. So B12 absorption, iron absorption can be affected. And then, you know, once the stomach acid is less potent and the pancreatic enzymes, which digest protein and things and fats, once they're not as potent, then it can start to unbalance the bacteria within the gut. So the microbiome within the gut, which is all, you know, very big news at the moment, and so it should be. So when the germs and the bacteria within the gut become unbalanced, that then can lead to further autoimmunity and exacerbation of that, and the gastrointestinal symptoms as well, like I mentioned, such as bloating and gas and belching and all the things you really don't need when you're trying to enjoy your life.
Yeah, wow, it's all so interconnected. So obviously, When everything slows down, you get constipation, that gets backed up, that's going to create fermentation, bad bacteria. If the stomach acid isn't working well, as you said, you're not going to break down your iron and your B12 and absorb it, so you're tired. I think it's amazing to know how everything is all coming down to the body really just slowing down and not doing its job properly.
Yeah, and you know, cardiovascular health is affected as well, and cholesterol can go up. Hypertension, so increased blood pressure, well, diastolic blood pressure is normally the one to go up. Everything is affected. And, you know, and to add insult to injury, often nobody really believes that you're sick, which really kind of is a bit of a blow. So you're there feeling tired and you're putting on weight and your gut is playing up and your periods are awful and you're exhausted. And yet it's hard to get that recognized, even by, you know, family and friends, because everybody just thinks it's a little thyroid thing that's so common. But, you know, thyroid is a big deal.
Do people ever just blame this on the menopause? Do they say it's menopausal symptoms?
These symptoms are very much similar. So perimenopausal symptoms, you know, the kind of estrogen roller coaster and the heavy periods and the not sleeping and all of the other stuff, the gut issues, they do kind of mirror each other. So if you are suffering with things like that, maybe don't just write it off as perimenopause, just get yourself checked for thyroid.
And what are the right types of tests that people should be doing? You said it's the TPO and the thyroglobulin and the thyroid peroxidase plus the TSH should give you a really good idea of whether you have this.
You can always ask your GP. You might find a sympathetic one that will run the tests, but usually if it's going to be investigated with the NHS, it's a straightforward TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. I like to see TSH around 2, or between 1.5 and 2, but the NHS's range will go up to 4.2 and see that as fine. Sometimes they'll be happy with it being higher than 4.2 as well. Personally, I think that says that something's going on and that maybe some support is needed. You know, lifestyle and nutrition support may help you in that case. But you can run your own test privately. There's lots of fantastic online testing companies now. So, you know, I'm thinking of companies such as Threva or Medichex. You can do a finger prick test at home. And I like to go for a thyroid ultravit test with Medichex, which is a finger prick test. You do it at home. It's fairly inexpensive considering the amount of markers that you can get tested for. And it can test you for B12 and ferritin and an inflammation marker as well called CRP, HSCP, and it will test your thyroglobulin antibodies and your thyroid peroxidase antibodies. It is possible to have just raised thyroglobulin antibodies and not to have raised thyroid peroxidase antibodies. That can happen. So having them both tested is helpful, because a lot of companies may only just test thyroid peroxidase and you think you're okay, but actually there is an immune thing going on with thyroglobulin. So it's worth doing that test, and that will test, you know, ferritin as well, and folate and B12, active B12, which is the more important part of the component of B12 that you need to actually feel well and energized.
Before we go on to talk about what people can do in terms of the nutrition and the lifestyle, and also mentioning your course, which I know you run on Hashimoto's and you're launching in the new year, via NicolaHodgesNutrition.com, let's talk about the root causes, because as nutritional therapists and functional medicine practitioners, we always like to go to the root cause, don't we?
Yes. Well, there are many. And I think very often we're quite good at blaming our genes for things, aren't we? So it can be quite easy to just say, oh, you know, it's just my genetics and it runs in my family and my mum had it and my gran had it or whatever. But, you know, our genes are not our destiny. I really believe that. And, you know, very often there may be a genetic component within that. There are a set of genes that have been associated with autoimmunity, but it's how the genes are interacting with the environment and the triggers, and they have to meet the right triggers in order for this kind of thing to start. So, okay, so there may be a genetic component, but we shouldn't just write that off and just sort of sit on our laurels and think we'll just take our medication and let the disease progress. So very often food sensitivities will be at play within this picture. So the big ones that I see are gluten and dairy. So you may not have any digestive symptoms by having a gluten and dairy sensitivity. That's a bit of a misnomer to think, oh, you know, I'm fine with gluten, I can eat lots of bread and I'm not in pain or anything. But very often food sensitivities will show symptoms elsewhere. So, for example, skin issues, headaches, migraines, tiredness, anxiety sometimes as well. So and it will affect the gut. If you have these sensitivities, the gut can become inflamed, but it may not necessarily be full-blown celiac disease, which is a very serious form of gluten sensitivity. But gut permeability is often within the picture as well. So having a permeable gut, because we're enjoying foods that we have sensitivities to, can expose the immune system to bacteria within the gut that it kind of shouldn't be exposed to. And that can set off the cascade of autoimmunity as well, or exacerbate it, if nothing else.
I've got you. So somebody may already have this, obviously, this autoimmune disease. But when you say the gut is permeable, you're meaning it's allowing bits of food through. And then those are circulating around the body. And then it creates, the body, the immune system wants to attack those particles.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So we want our gut to have a nice, healthy gut lining with tight junctions within it to only allow the things through, the nourishment through that should come through. But when we're eating foods that we're sensitive to or cause inflammation within the gut, that will open up those tight junctions and expose the gut bacteria and other proteins potentially that we've eaten. That will expose it to the immune cells within the gut, and they'll get quite excited about it. And then, you know, before you know it, we can have a full-blown sensitivity and start to make antibodies, which can cross-react with the thyroid then.
Yeah.
So it's quite complex, but it can perpetuate a problem that's already there, or it can trigger a new problem. Some of the proteins within gluten, and there are quite a few, some of the proteins within gluten can look quite like some of the proteins within the thyroid. The immune system, if it's going for that gluten, it may get confused and go for the thyroid as well. That's the kind of simplest way I can put it. It's a process called molecular mimicry. So very often that can happen with other foods as well. It doesn't have to be just gluten, but gluten is a big one. And if you have Hashimoto's, there's a jolly good chance that you have genetics for gluten sensitivity, which are also linked to celiac disease as well. So it may not be expressing celiac disease within you, but it can be a full-blown gluten sensitivity. And those genes are linked with Hashimoto's as well. Those genes are called the HLA DQ2 and 8, I think, if anybody wants to.
For anyone that's interested, do contact Nicola, nicolahodgesnutrition.com. I know you're going to be launching something in the new year.
It's hard to get to see everybody, or you know, that you want to help, and sometimes there are budget constraints as well. So working on, there's no substitute for working one-on-one with somebody, obviously, but there, in terms of a course, I'd like to set up a course where it's just the main pillars of what you need to do to get well. And that's what I kind of call the low-hanging fruit. And that might be enough to get you on your way. And it would be a more cost-effective way to learn that in your own time at home on a short online course. Like I say, more cost-effective than one-to-one. It won't be the same experience as a one-to-one. And we do go quite deep with all sorts of things, and you know, during my one-to-one sessions. But that's going to be launching hopefully by the end of January. So look out for that, or follow me on Facebook or Instagram. I'm always posting on there.
Yeah, I think fantastic that people can get this information to help themselves. But as you said, nothing can beat working one-to-one with a practitioner, because we go very deep with people. We're looking at the blood. We maybe sometimes look at the genetics, or we're doing a stool test, or nutrient testing, or we're looking at, you know, the levels of antibodies, how they're coming down, or are they flaring up again? And everything is very specific, but there are some hanging fruits that can really help you. And obviously you've mentioned gluten and dairy, but there are other food intolerances that may be implicated. But just to remind everyone about gluten, where do you find gluten, Nicola?
Well, this is it. It hides in all sorts of places. And, you know, food processing plants like to put it into things to give it texture. So, you know, you might not think it's in Worcestershire sauce or soy sauce. Wow. But it is, it's in there. And you can find it in all sorts of prepackaged sauces and crisps and things like that. So ultimately it's bread, you know, rye as well. Even the healthy dark breads, it's in there. Spelt is the same with gluten. So it is hiding in all sorts of places. And if you did want to remove gluten, I'd say the best place to go to find out where gluten is hiding is to go straight to the celiac website, celiac.org, I think it's called. There's two really good ones in this country. And that will list all of the places that gluten is hiding. It's even in skincare products. You'd be surprised. Oats are a big one. Yeah, because they shouldn't be, but they are, because they're processed in the same plant as flowers and things like that. And they kind of go down the same shoots, I've been told, in the factory. So they're all kind of contaminated with gluten, unless you buy specifically listed gluten-free oats, and then fine.
If you do have Hashimoto's, the more that you can get this out of your diet, the better, because it stimulates the immune system in the way that you don't want. And as you say, it's in all of these foods that we wouldn't be aware of. I discovered as well that it's in soy sauce, so now I use tamari.
Tamari soy sauce, yes, and it's actually nicer. It's a really good quality product.
Get a bit label savvy and you really start looking and understanding what different things mean, because sometimes textured vegetable protein, I think, could even be gluten. You have to do your homework on that. So you mentioned the celiac website.
Exactly, which is why it's such a good resource, because if it's kind of good enough for a celiac, then, you know, you'll be fine. Like I say, it's shocking how many things gluten is in.
You also mentioned dairy as another potential thing that one might be intolerant to, maybe stimulating the immune system in some way.
So it cross-reacts, and there are, I'm sad to say, a few other things that cross-react as well, like corn, for example, can. But dairy is a big one. It's the one that keeps coming up. And there are different proteins within dairy. So there's the casein and then there's the whey. I've done a Cyrex test and I know that I am sensitive to whey. I was expecting it to be casein, but no. So, you know, very often, sometimes, you know, people will think, oh, well, I'll get the whey protein shake down me, you know, every single day. And you just all know you need to kind of, if you can, again, working one-to-one, if you can test for your sensitivities and really know yourself, that's the best thing to do. If that's a possibility for you and budget allows and things, a test called a Cyrex test, which will test for cross-reactivities to many things. So there'll be, very often the ones that come up are oats and potato and dairy. But yeah, dairy is a big one. It's the one that usually comes up secondary. But there is a difference, I should just say, between lactose intolerance and a dairy sensitivity. So sometimes my clients will say, I'll have a milky drink, and then the next minute I have diarrhea out of nowhere within an hour. Mm-hmm. That sounds quite like a lactose intolerance, which is a different thing where we can't process, that we can't digest the sugar in the milk. Mm-hmm. So that would be quite an instant feedback mechanism with that one in terms of diarrhea.
Yes.
So I just worth mentioning that.
Yeah, it's an acute reaction, very quick, but with the sensitivity, it's more a delayed reaction. Okay, yeah. All right. And we were talking about how food can be at the root cause, genetically at the root cause of Hashimoto's. What else?
So vitamin D deficiency, which is quite common, and micronutrient deficiencies in general, selenium, iron, B12, folate, B vitamins in general, zinc, an inflammatory diet made up of dairy, wheat, manufactured seed oils, processed seed oils. So vitamin D is a big one, I think.
And especially at this time of year.
Yeah, and it's essential for immune system modulation. And a doctor recently said to us at a seminar that vitamin D is fantastic because it tells the immune system how to behave and to behave itself, which I thought was quite a nice way of putting it. Minimum vitamin D, I would say, should be 75 nanomoles. That should be what we're aiming for in the winter. And, you know, potentially up to 125 nanomoles would be perfect if that's possible, to get the vitamin D up to that. But, you know, sometimes it's not so easy. Some of us have genetic issues with the absorption of vitamin D and the transport of vitamin D within the body. So those people will need vitamin D supplementation. Well, most of us do in this country anyway, don't we, in the winter?
Yeah, I hear you. You mentioned iron and B12 could be at the cause, but it could also be the effect of hypothyroidism or Hashimoto's.
Yeah, exactly. And then it can perpetuate itself, and on it goes and on it goes. So iron is crucial for thyroid hormone synthesis. And it's not often discussed, actually, that iron is essential for that. But if you're low in iron, that's going to be basically if a client comes to me and they're tired and they know they're hypothyroid, unless we get that iron to an appropriate level, their ferritin is a good marker to go for. Just as a quick look, I mean, you may need to go deeper and look at other markers in a full blood count. But if the ferritin is really low and they're not absorbing their iron, much of the other things that we try to do may not get very far. So that's a first port of call, is to make sure that they have healthy iron levels and that they're able to absorb it.
It just shows you how important this testing is and how much it can tell us about the body. And then it gives you such a great starting point on, you know, where do I need to work? What do I need to do? How can I get those nutrient levels up? But even if you didn't do testing, you could bolster up your diet, you know, with iron-rich foods, vitamin B-rich foods. You may want to supplement yourself with these nutrients. You mentioned selenium, vitamin D, zinc, iron, B12, as a great way to support your thyroid gland.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the thing with iron, I always like to make sure that there is a need to supplement with iron first, because that's one of those ones that can be oxidative and if you don't need it. But, you know, most of my clients do need it. And selenium is another crucial one, as you mentioned, because selenium is needed to fight against oxidative stress within the thyroid gland. So the act of actually producing thyroid hormones is oxidative in and of itself. It's supposed to be. The thyroid peroxidase produces hydrogen peroxide, and the selenium helps to keep that in check and to stop it from producing too much damage. So very often clients will say, well, I eat a handful of, you know, Brazil nuts every day. Well, I don't like to use Brazil nuts as a way of getting selenium, because it's quite hard to monitor. Some Brazil nuts have very little selenium and some have a huge amount in there, because it can be toxic at high doses as well.
Yeah. So
selenium is always a nice one to consider supplementing with, just to make sure that you are getting the right amount every single day.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, I want to talk about viruses and inflammation, Nicola, because I had a client that came to me with Hashimoto's. Mm. And with me, and you probably work in the same way, I always like to go backwards to look at what happened in the past and to also find out about, you know, when did this problems start to happen? When did you start to feel these symptoms? And he'd had this really crazy period like 5 years ago. And at that time, he'd really run himself down. He was partying a lot, working a lot, not getting much sleep. And he got diagnosed with glandular fever, what a lot of people call the kissing disease.
Yes.
And I made the connection between this virus, the glandular fever, which goes everywhere, and you get it a lot at school or when you're run down, and the onslaught of his Hashimoto's.
Yes.
Do you think that's quite common?
Yeah, I would say so. And Lyme disease as well. Some of these things are really difficult to diagnose, Lyme disease in particular. And I think the key is to nourish the immune system and to really, really look at everything that you can do to support the immune system. And very often, if there is something that can be treated with the GP with medication, then of course, you know, run a test and refer back to the GP. So, you know, H. pylori, a very common stomach infection within the gut, you know, that needs antibiotics. And that's obviously outside of our scope of practice as nutritional therapists. So if that can be addressed with conventional medicine, then I would really suggest that it gets done, because these things can just bubble away for years, you know. And I've had shingles myself, and, you know, the pain from the shingles was actually there before the shingles appeared for over a year. So I often wonder, because I didn't know what it was. I thought I had this kind of backache, and then boom, the shingles happened. I thought, was that the whole time, shingles bubbling away, waiting for its moment to appear? Yes. So yeah, I would say that these things are really often seen with Hashimoto's. And again, you know, the answer to this, I think, is to go back to basics, you know, and really nourish the immune system and the body and the mind as well, because they are linked, very much linked. Stress and the immune system are very much best friends.
Well, what are your top tips for nourishing the immune system if you're really wanting to go to the cause?
Well,
and obviously it's different for each person, because when you're seeing people one-to-one, you're not just going to give them like a sheet of this is what you do for your immune system. So I don't want anyone to think, you know, this is just it. There's obviously more to it. But give us an idea of how we can support our immune system. Obviously, the vitamin D is very important, and some of those other nutrients that you mentioned, zinc and selenium. But what else?
So I like to work with a paleo diet in the main. That would be my go-to, a paleo template with some flexibility depending on who I'm working with, because there is no one size fits all. But the paleo diet, it will remove a lot of inflammatory foods which can aggravate the immune system. So, you know, grains are kind of not there, dairy is not there, but it's full of nutrient dense foods and meats and organic grass-fed beef and fish and salmon and, you know, wonderful anti-inflammatory fats, and really giving the gut a chance to heal as well from eating this way, as our ancestors used to eat, you know, 40,000 years ago. There was no processed foods. It was just all whole foods, minimal processed foods, in fact none at all if possible. That's a good place to start. But sleep, 9 hours sleep, I mean, you say 9 hours sleep and people laugh, but I, you know, 9 hours sleep has really helped me. We often aim for 6 or 7 and are happy with that, but sleep, so important, you know. And the right supplements, as you mentioned, making sure that you are getting all of the right micronutrients. But the paleo diet, if it's done properly, it will often encompass all of the nutrients that we need to feel well. Lots of different types of vegetables are key too. So different vegetable fibers and different vegetable colors make for a diverse microbiome, which will also support the immune system. So when the microbiome, the family of bacteria within the gut, when they're healthy and balanced, that has a positive impact on the immune system. And stress, you know, stress is the biggest thing. I think many of us are prone to overtraining now as well as a way of combating stress, but actually it creates a lot of stress chemistry within the body in and of itself. Running a good 10 miles might not be the best approach if you are feeling run down and already stressed out and already have an autoimmune condition. So I like to recommend that my clients look at yoga, Pilates, weights, nice walks, long, lovely walks in nature, things like that, that really get our nervous system in a happier state. Because, you know, when the adrenals are healthy and happy, that's really good for the thyroid as well, which is another important thing. They are bedfellows, the adrenal glands and the thyroid gland. So when they're healthy, the thyroid has a better chance at being healthy as well.
Fantastic. I'll be right back to talk to you a bit more about what you need to eat and what you need to avoid just after a few messages from our partner.
The station that makes you feel good.
Gala Light is the quantum energy emitted from the universe, from the sun and stars. Now, Tom Palladino, a humanitarian and Scalar Light researcher, has created the world's only Scalar Light healing system, a system that can bring long-distance healing and wellness to humans, pets, and plants via a photograph. Get your free 15-day trial now at scalarlight.com or click on the Scalar Light banner on the UK Health Radio website.
Shields like masks are top of mind right now, but did you know you have inner armor working constantly to protect you from pathogens? It keeps you healthy and thriving. It's your immune system. Ion Gut triggers the body's natural ability to support gut strength all year long, so your immune system can protect you when you need it the most. How are you treating your inner armor? Visit uk.ionbiome.com to learn more. Ion Gut. Protect what protects you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Now, Nicola, you mentioned the paleo diet is a wonderful diet, tailored specifically to the persons and their specific situation. But does the paleo diet mean no carbohydrates at all, Nicola?
No, definitely not. So it's actually possible to eat too many carbohydrates on the paleo diet, just like any other. So you could still be cooking paleo cakes all day if you wanted to, and having a banana and lots of dates and honey is permitted. And so, no, it's not. And excuse me. And very often, you know, the sweet potatoes are in there, and going really low carbohydrate until you've got your thyroid in balance is not something that you want to kind of push, because that can create stress chemistry again. Going very low carb is not something that I recommend, because we want our clients to sleep as well. And very low carb, I find that when my clients, their thyroid isn't completely optimal, it's hard work going low carb, and it doesn't feel very nice, and it creates more of an adrenal experience where you get hypoglycemia and low blood sugar, which creates an adrenaline kind of experience, which will also exacerbate autoimmunity as well. So this is a kind of gentle paleo template. I say gentle because you know, sometimes people might want to have a little bit of bran rice as well, which technically is a bit of a grey area on paleo. But part of being a nutritional therapist, I think, is adapting to what's realistic for busy people with children and things like this who aren't willing as well to try and go low carb. It's not that I'm against low carb, but, you know, as a mode of whatever, you know, it has lots of therapeutic effects for some kind of various kinds of disease states. But unless the thyroid is optimal, it won't feel very good trying to go low carb, I don't think. I've tried it.
This is going to be music to the ears of many of our listeners that were probably worrying that they had to go keto or something.
No, definitely not. And like I say, it's not to poo-poo keto, and I know it's big news, and I know it's great for a lot of people, but in this situation, that often my clients are what I would call adrenally fatigued by the time they come to me already without going low carb as well.
Yeah, I hear you. And I think using the term adrenally fatigued, I think you're referring to just being really exhausted. The body's glands, those adrenal glands that sit just above the kidneys, the ones that pump out the adrenaline, they've pumped out too much from all the stress and the stimulation, that they really need to be nurtured. And I guess not cutting out the carbs is probably just going to be a bit too much.
Yes.
Fantastic. So are there any foods other than, because you mentioned all of these multiple different type of vegetables that are wonderful, and the right supplements and the 9 hours of sleep and the lifestyle measures and avoiding gluten and dairy and the nutrients, vitamin D, zinc, iron, selenium. Mm. Are there any vegetables that they should avoid? Because
I'm glad you
brought that up. About the brassicas.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because this is a big one for me. So often clients will say to me, so I need to cut out brassicas then, do I? So that means cutting out cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, kale, and no, you do not need to cut them out at all. They are so nutrient dense, and this has all come about because they're said to be goitrogenic foods, which hamper the uptake of iodine into the thyroid. But the thing is, we'll talk about iodine if there's time, but I don't supplement iodine at all with my Hashimoto's clients because it can make Hashimoto's worse.
Really? So, there's a lot of people, they really believe in iodine being a fantastic nutrient for the thyroid, but you're saying not for Hashimoto's.
No, not for Hashimoto's. And I realize I might be divided in that opinion. I meet people who are definitely no to iodine. I'm one of them. Some are very pro, but it can ramp up the oxidative process within the thyroid involved in making thyroid hormones. So I think it's important to have enough iodine in the diet. So if you're eating a paleo diet and then you're eating fish and eggs, seafood is a huge has a huge amount of iodine in it, and seaweed in particular can be off the scale high in iodine, so I ask my clients to avoid that. But if you're eating fish and eggs, then you're getting enough iodine and it's fine and not to be avoided. And as for cruciferous vegetables, they have been found to help to increase glutathione levels, which is kind of the master antioxidant, which is really important for protecting against oxidative stress within the thyroid. So, and it has many other good properties for estrogen and estrogen detoxification. And many of us with Hashimoto's have an unopposed estrogen situation, hence heavy periods and PMT and things like that. So,
right.
So please get those cruciferous vegetables and the cauliflowers and the broccolis in there.
I'd love to talk to you again, and maybe
I'd love that.
Course or another topic, maybe autoimmune disease, which is major.
Thank you so much for having me.
And listeners, thank you for listening to UK Health Radio, your global feel-good radio, and catch me again next week.